Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Christine Quinn is here, City Council Speaker and 2013 likely mayoral candidate. She gave her annual State of the City speech yesterday, something the Speaker of the New York City Council has been doing for some time, and she's with me to discuss it now. Speaker Quinn, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks a lot.
Let's start with education and a proposal you made yesterday that's getting a lot of headlines, one that Mayor Bloomberg also endorses, by the way, mandatory kindergarten for all city five-year-olds. That isn't already the law?
You know, funny enough, that's what I said, too, when we started this conversation internally. It's not. It's not in New York, and it's only the law in 19 states, interestingly enough, which is curious because we all talk a lot about the importance of early childhood education, but apparently we're not putting it into action in a legal sense.
Is it the law for age 7 or for first grade?
First grade. And
so why does this matter?
Well, it matters because every study that's been out there shows that the best way to get children prepared to excel is really through preparing them with early child education, honestly, before kindergarten even. The problem is we have in some neighborhoods, on average, 6 to 7% of five-year-olds who aren't going to kindergarten. But in lower income neighborhoods, it can go as high as 11%. And we've heard a lot of evidence from an organization, Advocates for Children and others, that what's happening is immigrant families, foster families, they're going to enrollment officers, and the enrollment officers are saying, you don't have to do this. They don't necessarily know if they push, they can't be turned away. And that's why numbers are so high in some neighborhoods. And we want to make sure children have the foundation they need. The best way to do that is to require this so none of us have kind of a way out.
As I told you off the air, when I first heard this, I thought you were referring to universal pre-K, which is an issue that many education advocates think is more critical. We have public pre-K in New York, but only for a very small number of children.
Absolutely. And,
so why isn't that a universal right to access?
The first big education issue I took on 6 years ago as speaker was the issue of pre-K. And I would add to that what we really need is enough full-day pre-kindergarten for every family who needs it. We've had cutbacks in pre-K funding, but to put it in a context, when we were getting more money from the state for pre-K, we returned $20 million a year of half-day allotments and had waiting lists for full day. That's what working families need, and it's much better to prepare children. So I don't think we should stop at 5, but we can't really go, further back, so to speak, until we get that issue addressed. And Syracuse has a waiver in New York. They have this requirement. What we're asking is the state to give New York City this waiver so we can do what we think is right.
New York City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, while we're on education, you didn't mention this in your speech, but perhaps the biggest education story of the day is the announced closing last night of 23 schools.
Yeah, one of my
districts. Where are you on this contentious issue?
It's a terrible thing to have to close a school. And that said, there are times when it is going to have to happen. There are some schools that just aren't working, and we are going to have to close them. And DOE, when they see that, they're going to have to do that. That said, I'd like to shift the conversation a little. Why don't we start looking? We have a lot of test scores, a lot of data, God knows. Why aren't we flagging schools 5 years out, 7 years out, 3 years out, and saying this school isn't trending up, it's trending down? It'll take $15 million to close these schools. Let's take a part of that money, commit it to greater intervention early on, and maybe we can save some of these. It'll never get to zero, probably, but I think that's a way we could reduce the number.
Does it surprise you at all that more parents don't rally around the idea of closing these failing schools? Like, thank goodness the system is doing something, taking seriously the bad education my kids are getting. There's almost no voicing of that sentiment.
You hear a little bit of that, but I am surprised, honestly, you don't hear more of that. I think you don't hear more of that because there's a fear. You know what you know. Even if it doesn't work as well as you'd like it, you know the four corners of the building, and undoubtedly there's some teachers and staff there that you're connected to. But what when that school closes, the parents' fear is, what else is there going to be? Is there something better? So I don't think it's that parents want their children in bad schools, but they just fear of the unknown is often worse than fear of what you know.
Do you think if you were mayor, you would be closing fewer of these schools?
You know, I think the mayor would like to be closing fewer schools. Who likes to have a lot of schools, or a lot of anything?
But they're making their choice.
Right. But, you know, I hope that as the years move on through the rest of this mayor's term and into whoever the next mayor is, our schools are doing even better. And we're in a place where, particularly if we intervene in schools, say, 5 years out, we can put things in place that save them. A number of the schools that are getting phased out are middle schools. That's a place we've done a lot of work, and I really believe that if you intervene earlier in low-performing middle schools, as we have done with longer days, wraparound services, training, you can turn them around.
When you say, as we've done, who's we? The Bloomberg administration?
Well, a number of years ago in the council, we put together a middle schools task force, which is an unremarkable thing for a government to do, and we did a report, no big deal. But the thing that was different, the recommendations of the council's report were implemented in the 51 worst middle schools in the city. The we there was the council, the Department of Education, and those schools and not-for-profits. And we saw those 51 middle schools do better. Not every single one of them. Some went back to failing.
Another announcement from your speech yesterday, a new city program that would offer low-cost loans to cover up to 50% of the cost of child care for middle-class families, or those earning between about $40,000 and $111,000 annually. Why target those families? Does a family making six figures need daycare help?
You know, the truth is, first, let me be clear, we still have to continue our fight to keep subsidized daycare out there for low-income families. But if you hear talk to middle-class families, they are going into debt early on in the life of their family to have enough money to pay for quality child care, particularly if they have more than one child. That's a choice. We don't want families to have to do that. That's the kind of thing you don't even want to have to do if you're paying for college. So this kind of a loan program would give families the opportunity to spread out the cost of child care over a number of years and have them have a better financial stability for their families. The truth is, if you're making $100,000, if you think about all the costs in New York, you're better off than somebody making 40, but you may, even if you're, you know, living frugally, not have the extra money for good daycare for your two children.
Isn't the shutting of daycare slots for low-income New Yorkers one of the most contentious pieces of Mayor Bloomberg's proposed budget to the city council?
Absolutely. And that was an issue we took up big time last year, and I only imagine we will do it again. We can do that and talk about a loan program, which is a different type of issue in the budget, working with the Economic Development Corporation. We can do that. It's not really the same type of a budget impact, and do this at the same time.
City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, and one of your major recent accomplishments is a deal on a living wage proposal. We've talked about this with others on the show, but the gist of it is that any contractor getting more than $1 million subsidy from the city would be required to provide a living wage of $10 an hour to their direct employees.
Right.
That is not as far as people wanted to go in the Kingsbridge Armory dispute, where it would have covered the employees of the retail shops that would have opened up there. Are you happy with the compromise?
I am happy with the compromise and some other work we're doing as well. You know, I think the idea of saying you're a developer, you're a business, you decide of your own volition to take money from the city, then the city can set a standard. But the original Kingsbridge plan basically said, developer, you take money, you have to do this. But then coffee shop, clothes store, you rent from the developer, you've gotten nothing from the city, not a dime. You have to do something too. There's no nexus between the government and that coffee shop. And it went, in my perspective, beyond what was fair. Now, that said, if our Economic Development Corporation took the posture that their goal, their policy, was to negotiate deals that made it so that tenant was in a position. That could happen. Mm. That's happened in San Francisco. That's happened in LA. And I think our Economic Development Corporation should adopt that as an aggressive goal.
You and other supporters of the deal have referred to it, though, as a first step of a framework and a longer living wage.
Absolutely.
Longer term living wage deal. So what's the next step?
Well, the next step would be to push the Economic Development Corporation to become aggressive in this matter. You know, it was interesting in the hearings on the bill, I asked the folks from Los Angeles, how does this work? Does it cost you more taxpayer subsidy, which isn't necessarily bad? They said not always, because they talk to the developers and they'll say to them, hey, we want you to create a subsidy, basically, so your tenants have to do this. The developer might say, okay, but to do that, I can do a 10-acre park, not a 12-acre park, which is also part of the deal, or I could do a little less affordable housing or in a different way. When you have negotiations, as we did in the Domino Sugar land use deal, you can facilitate what I call wall-to-wall living wage, but you need that negotiation as opposed to a law which is X causes Y. So our next focus is getting the Economic Development Corporation. We can't force them to, but to use the bully pulpit on that.
So since Mayor Bloomberg, I guess, is not pushing his
Correct.
EDC in that direction, that's the bait for voters to consider you for mayor.
It's a hopeful potential for the future, whoever the next mayor is.
Another proposal from your speech yesterday, you're targeting bad landlords.
Yep.
You said instead of just fixing water damage, landlords would have to repair the hole in the roof that's causing it. Slumlords will have to spend real money and fix the real problem, or we'll haul them into housing court. Is this specifically about landlords facing foreclosure who then unfairly pass the problems that they're having onto their tenants?
You know, the foreclosure aspect of it is obviously a new and unfortunate additional wrinkle. But my first job in New York starting in the late 80s was as a housing organizer. So we've seen this type of a thing in other ways, too. So it's not just foreclosure. You know, I think our Department of Housing does a terrific job on going out there and cracking down on bad landlords. But the way it works now is you call them because there's a hole in your ceiling. They give a violation for that. They're not empowered to go up on the roof, see if the roof has a hole in it, and that's why you have a hole in your ceiling. So you end up a bit of a patchwork model. We're going to empower them to do that, and that's going to help tenants, but it's also not going to let the landlord get away with only half a solution, and I think that's going to make a difference. It has made a difference through our safe housing law, where we empowered them to do that in the worst buildings. It's worked. We're going to take it citywide.
All right. We have 2 minutes left. Lightning round, three quick questions, quick answers.
Because politicians are so good at that.
They won't limit you to yes or no,
okay,
as the pure lightning round does. But we have Fashion Week. We
yes.
have Restaurant Week. You want Design Week. Why?
Because we have more designers than any city in America. We want to spotlight them because what they're designing needs to be made into products. That leads to good manufacturing jobs. This is a way to expand our workforce.
You've been talking a lot about parking issues lately. You and the mayor disagree on whether there should be a 5-minute grace period for parking meter violations. You're for it. But won't drivers just stretch the grace period the way they stretch the current meter expiration?
Then they'll get a ticket. 5 minutes is 5 minutes. It seems fair because remember now, you don't get out of your car and put a quarter in the meter. You walk half a block to the muni meter. You walk back. You put the receipt in the window. What was happening was people were getting tickets during that walk.
That doesn't take 5 minutes.
Well, you know, if you're a senior, if you're a little longer, you pick a time. Five seemed reasonable.
15 seconds. Why shouldn't Big Blue, as Governor Christie has said, be called the New Jersey Giants?
Because they're the New York Giants. Enough already. They're the New York Giants. They're the New York Jets. They're the New York Mets. The New York Yankees. The Knicks. The Rangers. They're our teams. We're happy to share, but they're our teams.
And the Brooklyn Nets.
That's right. That's right. I didn't want to put salt in the wound for the poor governor.
City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll keep talking, listeners, to all the potential mayoral hopefuls. We had Scott Stringer last week. We have John Liu next week. We'll have the rest of them. And we thank Speaker Quinn, as always, for coming on the show as well. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.